Hello and welcome to Flora Funga Podcast with your host KK. This week we interview Carlos with Divine Flavor Cotton Candy Grapes. I bet you've seen these around in grocery stores. Kevin is a huge fan of them, and so I needed to know the science and the full history and story on cotton candy grapes and how they became. So we interview Carlos, and we talk about how to prune grapes, why people love the crunchy texture of grapes, are cotton candy grapes sweeter than other grapes, how do grapes form, what are some challenges with them, and what is some new science that is coming out with grapes. We even learn how to cross-pollinate them, and I want to know, are you a green grape or a red grape fan? All right, let's get down and nerdy in this week's episode.
After that day, Caitlin, nobody in their lives for years had said that that grape ate like cotton candy. Coffee, caramel, blah, blah, blah. But once you heard the name, everybody thought it tasted like cotton candy.
Welcome, Carlos, for being on Flora Funga Podcast. Every time we go to the grocery store, he's like, I need to get some cotton candy grapes. And I needed to get down to the nitty gritty of it. So introduce yourself and how you got into, I guess, Flora or, you know, grapes or anything in general.
Yeah, no. First of all, thank you for having me here, Caitlin. It is a pleasure. I've listened to your podcast before, and I find it ever since you invited me. Full disclosure, after you invited me, then of course.
Exactly.
That being said, I think the way you go, the way you explain things are very detailed and
thank
very
you.
So I hope I can make justice. First of all, you said introduce myself, so it's a disclaimer. I was born and raised in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So English is not my first language. I was born into a farming company. Mm-hmm. My grandfather, my father, who are not with us anymore, and my uncle, Alan, who is our CEO, president of the company. They started in the late 80s down in the state of Sonora in Mexico, which is the state just south of Arizona.
Okay.
So we lived 150 miles from the border. Right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was actually born in Tucson, but I was raised in.
Okay.
Yeah. And started pruning grapes when I was 12, started selling grapes when I was 15 in the Mexico market and Central America. And then I started doing some exports. And then since 2011, my partners asked me to move to the U.S. to go to manage the sales for our company, just Divine Flavor. Divine Flavor. And manage the sales also in the U.S. and Canada, as well as the rest of the world. You know, 89% of our grapes are sold in the U.S. and Canada, mm-hmm. Which is our main market, of course, by far.
Yeah.
And that's me. I'm married, happily married for 15 years, and I have three sons, three boys, mm-hmm. 14, 12, and 10, Carlos, Roberto, and Andres. And they keep me busy. Grapes.
I believe it.
Grapes, the kids, and the wife, right?
Yeah. All right. There you go. If they're all happy, you know?
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. How does one prune grapes to start with?
So it's done differently depending on where you're at. Oh, of course, another thing to explain to your audience. We do table grapes. So the grapes that you eat with a cheese board, with a snack. Not that the wine grapes are totally different.
Yeah, even though
they're the same species, right? Most wine grapes and most table grapes are Vitis vinifera, right? They actually, you can plant them in the same rootstock, actually. But they're managed completely different. They're raised or trained in a very different way and grown in different areas. They require different weather patterns, etc. What we do is table grapes.
Gotcha.
The way you prune table grapes is by hand. You have a lot of fantastic workers that know how to do that. And they go in and dormancy. Well, traditionally, I have a saying, and I'm going to repeat it on your podcast.
Cool.
When God was creating the world, he was sitting down in his office and he had a big sheet, right? And he said, we're going to do the earth, and there's going to be an ocean, and then we're going to create this human, and it's going to be a man and a woman, blah, 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 and they're going to eat, right? And part of the food is going to be this, 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 this. And then he said, grapes. And then he said, and grapes are going to be grown here, 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 and here. Where? Well, now we're growing grapes in a lot of places that God didn't intend to.
I believe it.
It wasn't part of the plan, including us in the desert. Grapes are traditionally grown in what is called a Mediterranean climate.
Right? Like olives, right?
Like olives, yeah, very similar. You know, traditionally, most data points that grapes are from the Middle East originally, the very first ones. But if you look at some of the wild varieties, are endemic to you know, Southeast Asia, some are to Japan. There's different flavors. All natural, God created, or genetic created, whatever you believe, right? I'm Mexican, so of course I it's in our nature to, to be Catholic. God created all grapes with seeds. That's another thing we humans did, right? We did the seedless. A lot of people are afraid of that, right? And oh, grapes are intended to be seeded. And there is a lot of antioxidants on the seeds, but most of the nutritional value of the grape is still in the grape itself. A lot of it is in the skin. And the way the grape lost the seed is by cross-pollinating, and that's something I think we're going to talk a little bit about. Varieties that had very, very tiny seeds or smaller seeds and just keep crossing and crossing and crossing until it just disappeared, right? But yeah, so grapes are supposed to be from the Middle East, but you know, there's endemic from everywhere, but I digress, right? Mediterranean climate.
Yeah.
In the Mediterranean climate, it's very simple. Grapes go into dormancy. That means after harvest and when it gets cold, because Mediterranean climate have a winter, right? It gets cold, they go to sleep. And then when you prune them is you practically take most of the branches out. So the main branch or the trunk is still there and part of, and the secondary branch also. There's several ways to prune, but the best way to explain it is that you cut out most of the branches, right? In some areas, after you do that, grapes just naturally wake up and they start developing again. All the branches, when it comes to commercial production, have to be guided. That's why you see a trellis system. That's to guide the branches for you to have a crop in a very uniform way throughout the plant.
Right.
That being said, like I said, now we're growing grapes in a lot of places that it's not Mediterranean. Some of them, this was practically invented by the Brazilians in Petronila, Brazil. And it's being done in Piura in Peru. And it's being done in Jalisco in Mexico. We're doing it ourselves, which means you're growing grapes in a place where they never go to sleep.
Okay.
So you're pruning twice a year. You're only harvesting once. Oh, because that's important. Grapes are harvested once. You got one set. Pick it. That's it. Next year you get more, right?
Okay.
But you prune twice because you got to form the plant. It's practice. You're building a plant every single year. It turns a perennial into a not perennial per se.
Like a little bush or like make it more thick or.
Yeah, well, you bring it down and then you will form your main branches.
Mm-hmm.
Where you will prune again to have very strong wood.
Okay.
We're in the business of producing very strong wood. When the wood is thick and strong, that means your quality of fruit is going to be better.
Right, right.
So in our company, we've made a strong investment led by my uncle to really push everyone in the production area to create good wood.
Yeah, and because it all starts from, you know, the roots are like, you know, the whole structure holding it up. Like, how are you going to get nice big grapes if you can't even hold up its own fruit?
Actually, that's a very good way to put it. Nature is so smart or sabio. Oh, damn. Nature is so wise. Nature is so wise that maybe that's the reason, right? Hey, you know what? If I don't have a thick wood, then I'm not going to grow a beautiful, strong, big piece of fruit because I'm not going to be able to hold it.
That also come into play, like the soil type and nutrients that you put into the soil? Like, what are you usually feeding it? Or is it like it'll grow in anything?
So we grow both organic and conventional
Okay.
grapes. We are by far the largest organic grower in all of Mexico, and I would say one of the top three organic growers in the world ourselves.
Wow.
So the nutrition is different depending if it's organic and conventional. For both of them, we are true believers that nutrition in the soil is what has to be first before nutrition on the actual plant. Instead of building a strong plant artificially, you help the soil for the soil to provide the nutrients as much as possible. That's why we use a lot of compost. We do our own compost. We have a compost factory in Mexico.
Okay.
We do tons and tons and tons of it, and we use it for.
Good.
We also grow some vegetables and some tomatoes and organic cucumbers, and we use it for that too. But of course, most of it is used for the table grapes. So we use that, and we also do compost tea,
Yeah.
lombricomposta, with the worms, right?
Yeah. Yep. I know about it.
But we have a worm farm in every ranch, right?
Oh,
Yeah, and we
it's
use it
all connected.
through the irrigation system. That's something we use for organic, but also for conventional, because we're truly believers that that provides a better piece of food for our consumers, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
Absolutely. And then other than that, basic nutrition, calcium is very important on grapes. It's what gives it the firmness of the grape, what's called the
Oh.
dry matter. So
Okay.
if you buy it on a grape, I don't have any grapes here, but if you buy it on a grape, we cut it down half, you will see that near the skin, it's going to be very white, like strong. You're going to see like it's firm around the skin. And always in the middle where the seed trace is, or the embryo, we'll talk about the embryo later, though that's a little bit softer, jellier, right?
Yes.
The dry matter is, it's the white stuff, the firm stuff. What you want on grapes to have better shelf life and better flavor, it's the dry matter. So calcium is important for that. Magnesium, manganesium is what you call it. Manganese.
Magnesium, yep. Or
No, the other one.
manganese. There's
No, both.
yeah.
Both of them.
Okay. Both. Gotcha.
Borum, borum.
Yep.
And with grapes, nitrogen is important, but you got to be very careful with it, because when you overdo your nitrogen, then the grapes will automatically lose its berries, and that is what then you get what is called a straggly bunch,
Oh,
which is a bunch with very little amount of berries.
to have divine flavor, you got to have divine nutrients.
Divine nutrients, exactly.
Okay.
Divine soil,
Yep.
right?
You can go on and on.
And a divine sales.
Yes, exactly. Yep. You need all of them.
Exactly.
So to get that like crispy like crunch when you bite into a grape, you need those specific nutrients.
Yeah, and
Yeah,
manage
because you don't want to bite into a soft grape. I don't know. Maybe some people are into that.
You know what? We've been getting a lot of data and really investigating.
Okay.
And I just had this conversation. I was in Peru at the beginning of the week with a customer.
Yeah.
And it seems that firmness, or the crunchiness of the grape, is not only a top preferred variable for the consumer, it's now, according to her and some of the data that I've been, and sometimes you see a data and it's in third place, sometimes in second, but you see it always on the top three, the firmness and the crunchiness of the grape. And we've been focusing a lot on that when we're choosing and picking which are the varieties that we want to plant next. Crunchiness has become a huge deciding factor.
Yeah, I don't need them if they're not crunchy. I'm gonna be honest.
Well, the one that we're talking about today actually is not known for being crunchy, but
I
that's different.
know.
That's not a grape. That's cotton candy. That's a
It's
total.
just cotton candy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't have it all, you know? I mean, you're working with nature. You can only go so far with, perfecting whatever you want, and then you're just becoming God at this point.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, tell me and tell listeners more about this cotton extravaganza. Like, how did the idea come about, and why cotton candy? How does this even work?
All right. It's a pretty interesting story. First of all, nobody thought about creating a cotton candy grape. That's
Okay.
enough. All right. It wasn't an idea. It was by chance. The variety was bred, and we'll explain how the breeding is done, because that's misunderstanding number one. When you say bred, people automatically go to GMO and
Yep.
weird, mad scientist, Frankenstein. This is naturally cross-pollinated. We'll explain that later. That was done in the state of California here in the US. All right. by a company that doesn't exist anymore that was called International Fruit Genetics, IFG, by a friend of mine, fantastic Dr. David Kane, who is now retired. He bred this variety, if I'm not mistaken, in the early 2000s now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are going to be amazed because cotton candy is new for a lot of people. But in order to cross-pollinate and breed a variety and have it in a market in a commercial way year-round, it takes a ton of time, right?
I believe it.
Dr. David Kane, together with some germoplasm. Germoplasm is what we call, you know, native plants or other varieties. The most varieties you have, if you have a ton of varieties to breed with, that's your germoplasm, mm-hmm. or your bank of genetics. With germoplasm from the University of Arkansas, and this is where it gets very interesting. Earlier today, we talked about Vitis vinifera, how both wine grapes and table grapes are Vitis vinifera, most of them, right? Maybe you've heard of a wine, a very sweet dessert wine that is called La Brusca. So La Brusca wine.
Brusca.
Maybe you heard it, but and maybe some of your listeners have. But La Brusca, it's another subspecies. It's a Vitis La Brusca.
Mm.
If you ever had a Concord grape, which was big in the Appalachians, that's La Brusca variety.
Okay.
Kyoho, there's a variety called Kyoho in Japan. It's a seeded variety, an old one. It was very preferred back then. That is a Vitis La Brusca. So the University of Arkansas had a lot of La Brusca breeder varieties that they had bred with. And what International Fruit Genetics did in California, they started crossbreeding two different subspecies. All right. So they bred an ocelot with a house cat. They bred a Vitis vinifera with a Vitis La Brusca. Well, not one. They bred a ton of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
See what the hell happens. Right? Because that's the thing. Nobody was, okay, we're going to do this because we're going to get a grape that eats like a cotton candy. No, it's right. Like, we'll see what the hell happens, right?
Yep.
And what happened was, this is where we come in, right? 2 years later, we're there in Delano, California. We're walking the fields. And they show, hey, look at this variety. It eats really different, right? It's not a grape. We eat it. And I'm like, damn, that's a caramel grape. And then my uncle is like, no, it's a toffee grape, a toffee. Right?
Yeah.
Nobody called it cotton candy, all right? It was a code. I don't remember what the code is. The code is just nine numbers. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of people, they started testing it further, right? With more, instead of one plant, it became 12 plants, and then it became 60 plants. And we called it toffee grape, the caramel grape. So the coffee or caramel grape became IFG7. IFG, the company, 7. That means this is the 7th cross that we've done that we think it's commercially viable. We don't know what we're going to call it yet. We got time because at that time, we're buying 2,000 plants to grow a hectare. A hectare is going to give us 2,500 boxes. A hectare is going to give us 20,000 bags.
Mm.
Put it in the consumer language. Wow. The little bags, a whole hectare will give us 20,000 bags, roughly.
Wow.
So that is very little for us at the beginning, no? But it's the way you start. And then we heard from IFG, hey, IFG 7 is going to be called cotton candy. Because somebody, I think it was a lady, a relative of one of the owners, an older lady, I think, she said, this eats like cotton candy.
Wow.
After that day, Caitlin, nobody in their lives for years had said that grape ate like cotton candy. Coffee, caramel, blah, blah, blah. But once you heard the name, everybody thought it tasted like cotton candy.
It's so true. It's so true. Like, I hope people have tried this grape and they're like, exactly. Like, I probably have some in my fridge right now.
If they don't tell you the name, you don't think it's cotton candy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, maybe you do, like this lady who came up with it, right? But another 500 of us didn't. So then after that, it was called cotton candy. IFG7 was called cotton candy. There was one grower. He used to be a partner in International Fruit Genetics. It's a company called Grapery. It's the only grower in California. The ones you can find in the store still now, and might be done now, are grown in California by the Grapery. Then there are some licensees in Brazil, in Peru, in Chile, and in Mexico, in Spain, in Italy. You know, it's in a lot of places. South Africa.
Okay, so there's multiple. So is there multiple companies making cotton candy grapes now? Okay, gotcha. It's not just like you and then you're exporting it.
No, it's
Okay.
different companies in different countries. Like
Okay.
our season is, we have cotton candy grapes from late November, imported from Peru, all the way to the end of July, which are the ones from Mexico. And we don't do cotton candies from August till November. That
Okay.
is the main supplier of cotton candies for the market. It's a company called Grapefree in the state of California.
So why is the US and Canada like the number one market?
Well, we're so close, first of all.
Okay.
It's the biggest economy in the world. It's very focused on, the US, even with all the overweight issues that we have and diabetes and all, the consumption of fruit is pretty good compared to other countries. It has to do with a lot of the economic or the purchasing power of the American. It's much higher than other countries. Even if you look at the demographics here, most of the people with a higher income are the ones that are able to buy more fruits and vegetables. Because sadly, in the US and in the world, do you curse in this podcast or nobody does?
Oh, I do.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah. All right. Because sadly, the shittiest food is the cheapest food,
It's
right?
so true, and that's so disappointing.
That's the way we see it when we're competing, when we look at our competitors. With this candy stuff that we're doing now, we have another variety called a gummy berry, another one that eats like a gummy bear. Then we
Gummy
have a
berry.
jelly berry that eats like the Welch's jam, like the jelly,
Okay.
right? All this stuff, the way we see it, we don't see that we're competing with our neighbors or the other people selling grapes. We're competing against Nabisco. We're competing against Lay's, right? And if we can get kids, mainly because there is, I don't remember the exact number, so I don't want to make it up, but it's a very big number when you do like polls
Yeah.
of the amount of people that buy grapes. A huge percentage are for kids because they
Yep.
have kids.
Yep, that makes sense.
So it's in order to give your kids an option, right, that they like. And I've seen it with my kids. And my kids love the bad stuff. My wife is a health coach, so they don't have access to a lot of bad stuff, but they like it. They're kids.
Right.
But they really enjoy this grapes. The weird, we call it the weird grapes, the candy grapes.
Yeah, the weird stuff. We
It's
love
weird.
and we support the
Yeah.
weird stuff here.
Oh,
Is there higher like sugar content compared to other grapes, or is it literally just the same, the flavor's just different?
so it all depends. And a lot, that's a very good question because we get it a lot. Because we get a lot of emails from consumers. And we get it. Sometimes for grapes and even for, hey, you're for, we grow a lot of mini peppers and we get, but nothing compared to the emails we get about cotton candy grapes, right?
Yeah.
The best one is, and it's every year, every single year, there's a person thinking that we inject the cotton candy grapes with cotton candy flavor or something. And then I say, you know what? Can you imagine the labor of injecting
That's so much.
120 berries? There's 120 berries on each bunch. There is 32 bunches per box on average, or 30. Can you imagine injecting
No.
that? So that's something we get a lot.
Yeah.
So the answer is depends because the spec, what we try to harvest cotton candy at 20 bricks. Bricks is the measurement level for
Oh,
sugar.
yep. Okay.
20 bricks. I've seen other growers sadly not doing justice to the bride because we believe that the cotton candy flavor appears on the grape at 19 bricks. But we do it at 20 because we harvest grapes as well as everyone else in the world with human beings, and human beings are prone to making mistakes. So we need to do it at 20. So we average 19.4, right?
Right.
But sadly, in other places, the commitment to flavor is not there. And because it is a profitable variety, because it has a following, it has a demand. People mainly in the Southern Hemisphere, in some cases, there are some really good cases, but in some cases, no. They harvest it at 16 and a half, 17 bricks.
Okay.
And that, I always say, it's good. Because cotton candy, as you've seen it and you have it in your fridge, it's not the best looking grape in the world. You could say it's. So what I always say, if it doesn't have 19 bricks, it's just a shitty green variety, right? It's a shitty green seedless variety because it eats like a grape. It doesn't eat like cotton candy, but it looks like shit too, right? So what's the point of doing that? You turn something that it's delicious and ugly into something that is, you're going to spit out, plus it's ugly, right? Because cotton candy is kind of ugly if you compare it to some of the beautiful other grapes that we grow, that are diamonds, just beautiful, but they eat like grapes.
Yeah.
Which people want, right? Like, so at the same, that by the same token, we have a red seedless variety that we like a lot. It's called Sweet Celebration. We harvest Sweet Celebration at 21 grapes. So that's higher sugar content than the cotton candy. Mm-hmm. But if I give you right now a cotton candy and a Sweet Celebration, you're going to think that cotton candy has more sugar.
Yep.
Because the cotton candy has lower acidity.
Oh, that's what it is.
So the sugar acid ratio is the most important thing when it comes to flavor on table grapes.
Yeah, that's magical. All right.
Those grapes won't change color. Well, for the good. Well, they could change color, but because it's mold or they're fruiting or stuff, right? But they're not going to, you know, a red grape's not going to get redder.
Right.
It's not going to get bigger, and it's not going to gain more sugar.
Gotcha. Okay.
Nothing changes once you harvest, except breaking down. Right? That's where the cold chain or the post-harvest management of the cold is very important. Grapes have to be stored at 32 degrees.
Okay.
Celsius. Yeah.
Wow. Do you think that that's like the biggest challenge you're facing is kind of like storage or picking them at the right time? Or what do you think is like your biggest challenge with growing grapes?
The biggest challenge? It depends on the area and everything. Right now, it depends on who you ask and where they're growing.
Gotcha.
Big challenge in Mexico is the lack of labor. Because I've always said that growing grapes is doing art. Grapes is the only fruit where you screw around with the fruit itself, meaning you're actually making a bunch instead of being this big and conical. You can make it round and beautiful. There's a lot of labor, manual labor, when it comes to grapes that you don't get in other fruit.
Right.
Like we do tomatoes, it's what's called thinning, right? So you could thin a tomato, but let's say you have a bunch of 10 tomatoes, you only want 8, so you just take 2 out. But on the grapes, it's dealing with the main shoulders, the inside. You want to create what we call a waist, so it looks like a bell. Because the grape, the best bunch, in the perception of the trade, the best bunch is bell-shaped, right? It's round. It's beautiful. Mm. Although when you think, if I tell you a bunch of grapes right now, you're thinking more conical.
Yep. Wow.
But something that is done on all grapes is tipping. You take the tip off.
Yep.
Because you want it more. And you have a lot of difference in size and quality and even flavor across the bunch. You're 2 away from the stem, from the main stem.
Wow. Yeah. How many different styles are there? Like how many different shapes can you, that are named?
No, we don't have names for it, but.
Like the conical and the bell and.
The conical and a campanada. We call it in Spanish, we say a campanada, which is bell shape.
Okay.
That's about it. Sometimes you have bunches that you can make it. Bell shape because you don't have primary shoulders, which are the first little branches that come from the top of the bunch, which are key for a good variety that is high yielding.
Okay.
You want to have big primary
good shoulders. You're looking for.
But in Mexico, labor has become an issue.
Yeah.
The amount of labor, not the quality. We're a fair trade certified company.
Mm-hmm.
So we were taught since we were kids to take care of our working force. So we are very strong into social responsibility. We have our own foundation. We have the best facilities and the most secure or safe facilities for our workers. That's something they really appreciate. So we haven't had those issues, but it's becoming every single year becomes increasingly more difficult to find the amount of people that we need to get everything done.
Right.
If you go to, you know, California, I mean, well, they had plenty of rain, but a year ago, the water was the main challenge.
Right.
You go to central Chile right now, to the fourth region in Chile, which is a big growing area. By far, the main challenge there is water, lack of water.
Mm. Yeah.
Last year in Peru, biggest challenge, civil unrest. It can be all kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it depends who you ask or where you're growing the grapes.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
In which year?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So you never really can like fully prepare. It's always kind of like, well, what's happening this year?
I forbade myself and my team to say this is the toughest and or weirdest year ever, because we say it every single freaking year. So it doesn't.
Yeah, and how does like climate change affect things like that too? I'm sure that there's, you know, something that has to deal with that.
Absolutely. We've seen delays in harvest. Well, right now, the grapes are significantly in your store right now, or your listeners, to any store they go in the United States right now. Grapes are significantly more expensive than they were last year at this time.
Yes.
That is an effect of a hurricane called Hillary that came into California, the first hurricane to go to enter California in 70 years, I think it was.
Wow.
Like that. And rain, if you get rain on grapes, it's not a good thing.
Oh.
You lose a percentage of them. They go bad. They get fungus, like a ceiling, right? So that is, you could say, you know, I am a believer in climate change, of course, but it's definitely weird to get a hurricane in freaking Bakersfield, California, right?
Yeah.
So in our case, it's been later, 3 years, so late. The start has been so late that now we're thinking, hey, maybe this is the new normal.
Yeah. Wow.
In Southern Baja, we grow greenhouses for organic vegetables. And we chose a place in Baja where it was safe of the hurricanes, because other places in Baja are dangerous for hurricanes. Well, we've had hurricanes twice the last 2 years there. And so it was the first time in 50 years, and it was back-to-back years.
Wow.
It's just the weirdest thing. So it's definitely changing.
Yeah, you just kind of have to be on your toes, I guess. And you were also mentioning the nutrition level, like with the grapes itself, so within the skin. So what is some of the benefits or nutrients from eating grapes?
Oh, you're going to love this part.
Yes.
So we make a strong push on the flavonoid part, which is an antioxidant, right?
Yes.
Grapes are good for that. And then you can, you know, if you Google it, grapes are good for skin. Grapes are good against diabetes, even though they have high sugar.
And yeah.
There's a study here, a study there, and blah, 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 blah. But flavonoids and riboterol, there's another antioxidant that's really good, and it's on grapes.
Okay.
Anti-aging, there's all kinds of stuff. But I think at the end of the day, is what we're trying to push for is, you know, it's better than an Oreo. But you're going to love is lately, some of the breeding companies have been working on a red flesh grape that has more antioxidants than a blueberry.
Oh, wow.
They're at the first stage right now. So those grapes are actually not that good eating, you know, small, low yields.
Yeah.
So not profitable, or you'd have to sell super expensive in order for it to be profitable.
Yeah. Okay.
They're going to keep breeding those with other parents and other parents, and they're going to come out in a very short time with a variety that is going to be much healthier than the crazy grapes. And then we'll decide, do we want a tart, healthy grape, like a blueberry? Or do you want to say, hey, you know what? Yeah, it's a treat. You're going to have a little bit more sugar in your system.
Yeah.
But you're going to have a lot more nutrition and a lot more flavor than a blueberry. Huh? So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
How that's down the road. That's coming.
Okay.
It's the next frontier on grapes.
Cool. And also, what is like the process of, I know you kind of mentioned like how you would cross-pollinate, but can you give any more details on how like a process kind of works with stuff like this?
Absolutely. Because that's the Frankenstein stuff. And that's a question a lot of people have. So when you look at a bunch of grapes, every single berry, when they're tiny, it's a little flower. Like all fruits, grapes are also a flower before it's a fruit. But the bunch, it's a bunch of little flowers, right? So flowers and grapes, like all flowers, have pollen. So that means if you take the pollen from one flower of variety X and you put it on the flower of variety Y, that particular flower or that bunch is going to come up with offspring of those two. Right?
Yes.
That's how you create a new variety.
Wow.
There's another.
It's so easy.
It's so easy, right? So then you make the cross pollination. So you get a bunch, right? You cross, let's say, sorry, finally came. You cross a Labrusca and a Vinifera, and you get an offspring. Okay, so how do you think you can turn that bunch into plants?
Well, do they have seeds or are these the
All
seedlings?
seedless.
Okay. So would you have to take the flowers from that one and then do it again with another one? Or you do like a graft of some sort or
So yeah, well, I cheated because I said you said it's seedless, and I said yes. So there are no totally seedless grapes in the world.
Gotcha.
Look at your grapes. There is going to be a tiny seed trace that is edible, that is not bitter. Say seed trace or two.
Seed trace.
Inside that seed trace, microscopically, there is an embryo. That's why breeding in our industry is also called embryo rescue. Right? So you take that embryo, you put it in a test tube, I don't know what the hell they do with it afterwards, but it turns into a little plant, and that turns into a bigger plant, and that turns into a huge plant. You don't have to wait. That this is the way we reproduce new varieties or old varieties, the way grape plants are reproduced in the world. Once you have that first plant of your variety, you don't have to rescue all the little embryos and all the berries. You take one shoot, one piece of branch from anywhere in the plant, as long as it has a bud, and that bud you put on the ground, it's going to be another plant.
Wow. Okay.
Any bunch of grapes, you need two buds. All right. So a bud in the bottom and a bud at the top. You put it
Got it.
on the soil. The one on the bottom is going to create roots. The one on the top is going to create the plant.
Okay.
That's how you
Wow. That's pretty, I mean, like thinking about it seems pretty simple, but you have to do tons of different generations of that and then crossing it again to perfect that. And yeah, that's a lot of labor.
It's fun. Most of it is done in nurseries that are in the business of doing that. So us being a commercial farm, we do have our little nursery where we do some stuff, but most of the stuff that we plant, we buy it from nurseries. That's their business. You mentioned grafting. In our company, we do 100% of it grafted, where the root system is one variety, and on the top is your variety, the one you're going to grow and sell. But we want to have better roots. So there are varieties very well known to have great root systems, and those are the ones we use.
So you're like kind of picking the best of the best and then
Yeah.
sticking with that.
Best for rooting, the best for fruiting.
Yeah.
Right?
Perfect.
So that is how you go from, oh, and the way they take the pollen from a flower is with an array, a pencil eraser, like that purple, pinkish thing. You take the pollen with that, and then you put it on the other one.
That makes sense. I mean, using your finger would be too much, or like a Q-tip or something like that, but
I guess the Q-tip, it stays inside the fibers.
yeah. Okay.
That's how they do it. That's how you go from getting a pencil and cross-pollinating a flower into reproducing that first plant into more plants, and then more plants, and then more plants.
Wow. Wow. And what was the first reaction like when you released the cotton candy variety? Were people kind of like standoffish or were people really excited to try it?
It took off from the beginning.
Wow. Just
From
so
the
unique, you know?
And a lot of it is, I am a true, true believer, Caitlin, that if it was called the caramel grape, it would, maybe there's a place in the market for it, and I think there would be, and we'd have to do a big
People
push
like hot
ourselves.
caramel.
Yeah, people like caramel, but it's a little too standard.
Yeah.
Once it was called, if the grape wasn't called cotton candy, I don't think it would be where it is right now, like whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that it says cotton candy made people curious. The pink
Yeah.
color really standing out with anything that was out there. And once they tried it, the big, you go to YouTube and put cotton candy grapes around, the big thing is like, oh my God, it really does taste like cotton candy.
Yeah, are other things in the works for the future of grapes, or what do you kind of see the future of grapes looking like?
I think it's the healthy part is the horizon. I think something funny when it comes to grapes, Caitlin. red grapes were sold in the U.S. about 60 to 40 against green grapes as early as 3 years ago or 4 years ago.
Okay.
But with new varieties coming now that are way better on greens, we've changed, not we, Divine Flavor, the industry has changed the mindset of people believing that green grapes were tart and reds were sweet because the new varieties eat a lot better. So now, 2022 was the first year where green grapes sold more in the U.S. than red grapes.
I like green grapes more.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It does feel like it's less sweet, but that's why I like green grapes. So I don't know what the real, is it just like the trick of our eyes or is there actual science behind it?
I think it has its previous experience and your instinct, because I think when you were a kid,
yeah,
you did try a bunch of green grapes that were tart.
Yeah.
Right? Huh. They're getting sweeter now. And we go back to the Brix level. We're harvesting at the same Brix level practically. Like there is.
Right.
Well, the one that we have, there's a variety that we harvest at 24. That's the sweet. That's the one with the most sugar. It's called a jelly berry. The one that eats like the.
Yeah.
The marmalade.
Yeah. Once you put like candy into a grape, people are all about it.
That's my favorite grape in the world, the jelly berry.
Jelly berry. Yeah, I have yet to try that one. So
it's not that I have to say it, but really my favorite fruit in the world is table grapes. And it's the fruit that I've ate the most in my life. And I grew up with it, but I don't, you know how sometimes you grow to hate it?
Mm-hmm.
I love grapes. And they keep getting better, so I can't hate them because they keep getting better and better and better.
Right.
We're trying, we have our slogan at Divine Flavor is a better food for a better world. And we're trying to do that one little grape at a time. When it comes to growing grapes, the ethical part is with the people, of course. But when it comes to sustainability, on growing grapes, you have to be very conscious of water usage, right? Yeah. And water quality.
A lot of water in grapes, so.
But the most pressing issue when it comes to sustainability for grapes is, what's the packaging where you find your grapes in?
Plastic.
Either a clamshell.
Mm-hmm.
And we've come up with little cardboard bags and cardboard little boxes. And then we try them. And the retailers tell us, they didn't do well. People want to see the product before. Right?
Huh.
And then we tried it on grape tomatoes because we do grape tomatoes and sales went down 45% less.
Wow. Just, yeah.
See their fruit and they're afraid, hey, if there's a bad berry in there, a DK berry, a split berry, a fungus, go to the store and see how people pick up the bag of grapes. And most people.
Oh, yeah.
60. You look
and then
around.
You have to try one, obviously.
Of course. And people, you know, and people are encouraged to try them. You know, nature intended this to be our food.
Mm-hmm.
We, all this processed food, every year you see more and more how it hurts us, right? It's not good for a human being. So I think podcasts like yours, my wife has a podcast also in Spanish about good eating habits and just good habits in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like you and other across the world create, planting that seed and really making more and more people have the right conscience on what they put inside their bodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. We don't put diesel gas on our cars, but we put, you know, Doritos in our body.
Yeah.
Doritos are bad to our body like diesel is to our unleaded car.
Yeah. Yeah. They've created it to.
And
be,
I do it too, no? And I'm oh, doing, I do
me
it too.
Right? Yeah. For sure. Takis. Yes.
Oh, there's more and more news coming. Like how stupid we're eating, it's becoming more clear.
Yeah.
Right? It's becoming more obvious.
Yes.
I think we're at a point right now when it comes to bad eating habits as we were with smoking in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's bad, but let's smoke in church, right? We kind of know it's bad, but let's smoke inside the airplane with everyone around.
Nice.
I believe we're at that point. So how can we get involved? The way I see it, I don't have an answer for that. The way we see it is with our kids. right?
Yep.
Kids, and setting an example for them as much as possible, really explaining to them, hey, you know what, dude, you're going to go to a party today. There's going to be pizza. Eat the damn pizza. But tonight, you know, we're going to sort of detox over that pizza. So we're not going to do a quesadilla. You know, we're going to do a Caesar salad.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, you know, a lot of kids right now are getting obese and have, you know, different diseases already. And it's kind of like, wow, how is that happening? It's because of what we're, you know, eating and just consuming a lot of processed food. So I think we're also, yeah, starting to realize like it's affecting all of us at all ages. And it starts kind of with what you're putting into your body.
It's heartbreaking.
Yep. It is. It is. And sad, but I'm really glad that you're doing what you're doing and you're expanding people's knowledge on things and just creating a really fun and delicious product. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate you inviting me over,
yeah.
And what you do. It's very, very fun.
Thank you.
I hope you keep doing it for a long, long time.
Yeah. Thank
And,
you.
And if you wanted to, I have the pleasure of meeting a lot of people in the industry. So if, you know, you want to talk about another, and when it comes to produce in particular, you want to talk about another product.
Okay. Thank you. And where can people find you or your grapes in general?
Grapes in general, it's across the country. Right now, our season is December to July. But, you know, Florida, our Publix is a big customer of ours. Huge customer.
Oh yeah, Publix is awesome.
Yeah, so down in your neck of the woods, but no, we're across the country with practically all retailers. We are thankfully the largest importer of table grapes, and we go everywhere. Well, the cotton candies are a little bit more specific; they don't go absolutely everywhere, and we have customers that are, let's call it, hardcore cotton candy customers that don't like to bring cotton candies from Brazil, Peru, or Chile. They only want the Mexican and the California ones, because those are the only ones that really eat like a cotton candy. So they'd rather not have it and have it from those places.
Right. Right.
But we'll start bringing some, and we're getting better everywhere.
Awesome. Right? Yeah. No, I think the future of grapes is always, it's just gonna, well, even with food in general, I think, like we were saying, more healthy, or trying to sneak it into things and have people, you know, get more interested in it. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Carlos, for being on the podcast today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Bye. Hope you feel better and have a great rest of your day.
I only caught once.
Yeah. No, I'm impressed. I didn't even know. You're
taking after we're done.
You were just holding it all in. Well, thank you again. See ya. Tired of feeling drained and lethargic? Wish you could boost your energy levels naturally and stay focused throughout the day with no crash? I've been struggling with this problem too. Thank you to Sovereignty's Purpose for the ultimate energy of the day. Imagine a world where you wake up feeling refreshed, alert, and ready to conquer any challenge that comes your way. With Sovereignty, you live your life with purpose. Whether you're tackling a project, powering through a workout, or simply need a pick-me-up during the day, purpose is carefully crafted with a powerful combination of amazing ingredients like green coffee bean extract, cordyceps, ashwagandha, bacopa, beet juice, hemp blend, green tea extract, cherry, blueberry, broccoli, kale, and turmeric extract. All of this is only 25 calories and 115 milligrams of caffeine with no jitters and no crashes. Harness this aptogenic blend of benefits in your next smoothie, drink, cocktail, or dessert. Whether you're an entrepreneur, farmer, business professional, or student, purpose has got your back. No more sluggish afternoons and hello productivity that lasts. Grab your blend with 10% off using the code KK10 on sovereignty.co. That's SOVEREIGNTY.co and use KK20 for 20% off at checkout.